Hi, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And I have asked Joan Price to come back and do another presentation with us. Joan, as you may remember, if you heard the last one, and if you don't, I will reintroduce her. She is the author of Naked at Our Age, Talking Out Loud About Senior Sex. And how she came to this is just through her own experience of finding the love of her life at the age of 57 and finding out that it was better than her wildest dreams.
That's right.
Better than, what was your first book called?
Better Than I Ever Expected.
Better Than I Ever Expected. Joan's website is www.joanprice.com, JOANPRICE.com. And you can go there and find out about Joan and her books and her work. So I'm going to go to Joan now because after our last presentation, we started talking about her parents and life. Well, I'm just going to go to Joan. You talk about your parents and what their life was and being their daughter and
what you saw
in life.
I am 67 and was born in 1943, so that sort of sets the scene. And my parents, my mother wanted her entire life to be a doctor. That's all she wanted. My uncle tells me now that on her 16th birthday, she asked for a microscope, and this was all she ever wanted.
And she was born in what year?
She was
1916-ish?
I have to figure that out.
Yeah, early 1900s. Okay.
I have to figure that out somehow.
Sorry.
And, well, let's see. She was 25 when I was born. I'm 67, so someone can do the math
yes.
and get back to us.
Okay.
That's all she ever wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And she had the best grades in her class. She graduated Phi Beta Kappa from college. But at that time, there was a quota against women and against Jews for medical school. I mean, it's hard to believe. This is our country, and it wasn't that long ago.
Yes.
And she did not get into medical school. But my father, whose grades were lower than his, than hers, did. And so she spent his medical school helping him study, writing his papers, and he became a doctor, and she became the receptionist and lab assistant in his office.
So that was like a constant knife in her heart?
Yes.
Must have been.
And she was a very bitter and unhappy, unfulfilled woman. Growing up, I didn't understand any of that. I knew that my father was a doctor and my mom worked in his office, that she did pregnancy tests on frogs and mice.
Rabbits had to die at that time.
And then came home and slapped together dinner and never seemed to smile or laugh or like me very much.
Oh.
That's what I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really until I was, I think probably just 20 years ago, that I had some wonderful heart-to-heart talks with an uncle of mine, her brother, who filled me in on who she was.
May I ask what she said? What he said?
He said, well, he told me the story that about her, that's all she ever wanted.
Oh, I see. That's how you knew
that. And the microscope. And he said that even, well, that we, my grandmother was a different story, but not a very good role model for parenting. And so my uncle tells me my mother would practice smiling in the mirror to learn how to do it as a teenager. And so these glimmers like this, I realized.
Well, then that was before she didn't get into medical school.
Before,
so there was always a little bit of a trouble in this area.
There was always trouble. And it was as if I can just be a doctor, it'll be okay.
Oh, I see.
Because I'm scientific. You know, I'm speaking for her, trying to channel her. I'm scientific. I'm really good at that. I can relate to people if I'm solving a problem for them. Not an emotional relation, but you got a disease, I'll fix it. And that's all she ever wanted to do and never did get to do that. And she also, I discovered, because I inherited letters between the two of them in their first years of marriage when my father was in the service. I learned that she didn't want to have children.
Did you dive right into those letters, or did it take you a while to decide to read them?
Well, I didn't even know they existed at
first. I mean, once you found them.
Because what happened is my my mother died long before my father. My father remarried, took the letters with him.
I see.
Then when my father died, my stepmother found the letters and said, this has got to go to the children. I don't want them.
Oh, good for her.
And so then they went first to my brother, who was on the East Coast where the letters were. And then he said, I think maybe you want to read them. I don't know if I'm going to read them. Mm-hmm. It seems like an invasion of privacy.
That's why I was asking.
And I said, I'll read them. Yeah. I want to read them. And they were revealing in how little revealing they were.
Mm.
Even to her new husband, my mother was not seeming to connect emotionally. She wasn't writing words of love. She was writing what she did all day.
Oh, so that's a really good point, because a love letter is different from the here's what I did all day and here's how my summer went. A love letter is about the other guy.
Yeah.
And what you feel.
Yeah, but
and how that person makes you,
Now, it's possible those letters weren't kept. I mean, I'd love to think they exist, but they were destroyed. Like, I don't want to put this in a box. And maybe even my father went through them and said, well, this is sentimental value to me, but do I really want my children inheriting our love letters? So maybe they existed. I never knew that.
Mm-hmm.
I saw no signs that they would have existed.
Yes, it doesn't sound like it.
My parents had, I guess, for them, a good marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Solid marriage, supportive marriage. I never saw any romance between them.
Uh-huh.
I never saw any affection between them. And it was hard growing up in that family.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I didn't really belong there. I was, as my mother said, too emotional.
Yeah, you know, I think you're making a point that always kind of interests me, is we talk about chemistry between sweethearts.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also chemistry between friends and parents and children.
Yeah.
And you're lucky if you have it.
You see, one of the things that I remember strongly growing up, even as a child, an older child, we'd go to a restaurant. Like, I remember once we went to a Lebanese restaurant. I'd never had Lebanese food. I didn't know what it was. I got up from my chair and I went over to these other people who were eating. And I was saying, what's that? What's that? And my mother was mortified, and I thought, well, I'm gathering, you know, how do I know what to order when I never heard of these things? And that was a very small thing that just stuck in my mind, because it indicated our major difference. She was, don't get noticed, and I was, find out what you want to find out.
Mm-hmm.
And this carried through in religion. I was never raised Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised atheist,
mm-hmm.
confirmed scientist atheist kind of thing. And when I said in high school, I want to start going to my friends' churches and synagogues and learn about religion, my mother said, you may not.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yes, you may not. We're well known in the community, and I don't want people talking.
Huh. Uh-huh.
And it was all about, we don't want people
well,
talking.
Well, that was a very big thing
of that generation. Oh, she'd be so embarrassed by what I'm doing now.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And in fact, like someone would ask me a question and say, you're Jewish, Joan, aren't you? And I said, well, I mean, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't raised Jewish, but that's my ethnicity. Well, tell me the story behind this holiday. And I said, I have no idea.
Yes.
Ask Judy, the rabbi's daughter over there.
Yes.
And it was hard for me because I felt a lack of something. I didn't know what it was, but I wanted to explore that and so many other things.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I could go away to college, I went away to college.
Now, what was your father like with you?
My father was a very nice man, a warm man, but he wasn't there very much. He was an obstetrician.
Mm-hmm.
He was delivering babies.
Yes.
And we would be maybe sitting at dinner. We wouldn't know if he'd come home for dinner or not. He could come home, get a phone call, be gone again.
Mm-hmm.
That was our life.
Now, did you and your brother have the same set of parents? And I'm asking
same
that because they say no two children have the same set of parents.
Oh, well, then with the way you're saying it, no. Same set of biology.
Right.
He came 4 years later,
mm-hmm.
and my mother adored him.
Oh, my.
I don't know. I thought later, I did some writing about this, trying to figure it out. Why did she genuinely not love me? And I just never felt loved, really. And now to this day, think she tried, but she did not.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't capable of loving me.
Mm-hmm.
But she was capable of loving my brother very, very much. And I think, was I maybe the girl child who represented what she could not do with her life? Maybe, maybe not I'd be able to do it with mine. But maybe I was showing her, here's this real spunky kid who wants to try things, explore things, find her way. And she seemed to think I needed to be held back from that.
Oh.
You know, I'll never be able to ask her.
Right. But, you know, there are two things that occur to me. I mean, sometimes parents do very bizarre things in an attempt to keep their children safe. Like, maybe she didn't want you to try because she didn't want you knocked on the head.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, maybe so. And when it was time to apply to college...
Or maybe she didn't want to see you succeed and show her that...
I don't think it was that. Uh-huh. I don't think it was that she wanted me... In fact, she was... I had to get straight A's. I had And it was funny. I got straight A's in everything but science. Mm-hmm. And I had a blind spot with science because that was her subject. I'm sure that's what it was. I couldn't remember facts. I still can't remember facts. Fortunately, I look things up.
Oh, well, thank God you don't have to remember everything today. Oh. Anything with Google.
I know.
You almost don't need a brain.
Well, you need a brain to use it. But so we were so different in that, in our capabilities. And in, I really felt, how did I get born to this family? But...
Well, you know, you had said at one point before when we were talking that you get her now.
Yeah.
And if you were to write a love letter to her, what would it be?
I would tell her my understanding of her aspirations, I'm going to cry over this, wishing that she could have had the life she wanted, and I wish she could have had something of the pleasure of having the life one wants the way I have it.
Mm-hmm.
And that although she couldn't say "atta girl" to me, she couldn't even really say "I love you" to me.
Mm-hmm.
I know if she could look at what I'm doing now, though she'd be shocked as heck as my topic, she would be thinking, good for you.
I was wondering about that.
I hope so. And I'll never know, so I'll form it that way.
Yes.
That's how I'm going to see it, that she would.
I have a feeling that in some of the women, like your mother, and a lot of that generation, I think, there is that little bit of something that would be in spite of, I'm glad you did it.
Yeah.
That they could never really allow.
Well, I hope we could have talked about it.
Yes.
There was one time she wrote me a letter. I guess I'll call it the only love letter I ever got from her.
Okay.
I'd finished college. And I'd won a Fulbright to Italy.
Oh.
A teaching assistantship.
In what field was...
I was going to assist in a high school assisting the teachers of English, being sort of the mouthpiece.
Oh, so teaching.
The native speaker.
Uh-huh.
But I was assisting them. Mm-hmm. They were supposed to do the teaching, and I would be the voice.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, it turned out, is they were all embarrassed about their English. So they'd leave the room. They'd say, I'll just get a cup of coffee. I'll be right back. And I would teach the class. It was so much fun because I learned Italian very quickly, but I pretended I didn't so that they would have to speak to me in English.
Uh-huh.
And then one of the most interesting parts was hearing their asides to each other that they thought I didn't understand. But when I was applying for the Fulbright, my parents did not think I was going to get it.
Uh-huh.
And this was this was similar to how they treated me all along, I think, that they just didn't see that going after something that was just my goal and that it was a little out of reach as they saw it. Joan winning a Fulbright? Come on. I didn't win Fulbrights. But I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I heard was when I phoned my parents to tell them I'd won it, they had to close the office. They were in such shock. to just send the patients home. And close the office for the afternoon. And then when I went, I had a summer, and I don't remember if I spent it with them. I think I might have before I went off to Italy. And when I was leaving, my mother handed me a letter.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, you know, I've lost it. I wish I hadn't lost it. I don't have any idea where to find it. She said, I'm proud of you.
Oh, my goodness. Okay,
there
you have it.
Heard those words.
There you have it.
And that was the last time I saw her alive.
I hope you've written this down.
I haven't.
Okay.
I'm going to.
Uh-huh.
Because she died of lupus.
Oh.
While I was in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never saw her alive again. Oh, I'm wrong. I did come home once when she was sick.
Mm-hmm.
I did come home once when she was sick. Finally I blocked
that out. So are you, yeah.
And it was very, very difficult.
Mm. To see her sick?
Well, no, because she was in some ways emotionally worse, really angry, furious. She was less accepting of me than ever because of the drugs she was on. And that's what my father said. She's on drugs. It's not her, it's the disease talking, which I learned to understand much better later on when I had another
So what would you say to her? Am I to understand that you would write her a love letter?
Well, that'll be hard. But yes, I think I should.
Good point.
Yes, I should.
Yes. I don't ever say that writing every love letter is easy. My goodness.
It's not a gush letter. You know, it's not like, I've got to tell you this or I'm not holding back.
How do you know? You haven't started it yet.
It's true. I haven't started it yet.
And, you know, in the workshops that I do, the first step, one woman that who I remember very well said to me in a workshop, I want to write a hate letter. Is that okay?
Mm.
And I said, well, sure, that's okay, but not in this workshop because that's not what it's about. And she ended up writing the most beautiful love letter to someone she was angry at. So it felt like hate to her. But sometimes those love letters that we write to somebody we don't actually feel a lot of active love for when we start out are even more powerful because of the garbage we've had to sift through to get those nuggets of positive.
And because by now I'm realizing talking to you, I've let go of the negative stuff.
Yes.
I can find it again in an interview, but
why bother?
It doesn't determine anything.
It doesn't drive your life.
I think about or how I see myself anymore.
Yes.
And when I wrote Better Than I Ever Expected, I wrote about an incident where my parents discovered I had been having sex with my teenage boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And they reacted very, very badly to
it. How did they put that to you?
The way they put, my father said, who was the aggressor? There was no aggressor.
Oh, my. I don't mean to laugh, but it's such a dated response.
I mean, I was dated. I was 18 at the time they found out.
Yes.
And about to become 19 when my father confronted me with this. I had already gone off to college. They didn't know about it before. And I'd been with this boy for 4 years and had been sleeping with him for two.
Uh-huh.
One and a half, not very long, and it was a very loving relationship. It was a first love, for God's sakes. There was no aggression.
Did you explain that to your father?
Yes, but the way I felt is he was dragging a beautiful love into the mud and saying, let's see how creepy I can make this. And they insisted that I come home the next weekend. So I did. And they told me I was not allowed to see my boyfriend except in the presence of either my parents or his. Now, he was 2 years older.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess let's say I was 18. That's the best I can do. He was 20 by now. I mean, you'd think, what? You know, they're talking to you like you're 14. Yeah.
Right.
But until marriage, we weren't supposed to do these things. And they could not acknowledge
it. Did your mother talk to you about it also?
What she said, and I remember what she said, this is for your best interest. We see pregnancy all the time.
Oh, sure. She did the pregnancy test.
She did the pregnancy test, and my classmates got sent away if they got pregnant.
That's her
frame of reference. And she said, and this really startled me, once you've had sex, you're not going to be able to not do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I was so startled by that because it was the only thing she'd ever said that was positive about sex, you know, that you wanted
that you're going
to
like it. Yes.
You're going to like it. I had no clue she felt that way or that she'd ever even experienced it. Well, in order to see my boyfriend at all, I would have to make that agreement, they thought.
Mm-hmm.
So I made the agreement and then promptly went out and cheated and sneaked. And it was such a bad response to what had happened. When I was writing Better Than I Ever Expected, this was the celebration of senior sex.
Mm-hmm.
But part of it is to acknowledge our sexual history and move past it. And so I wrote about this incident, and I showed it to my uncle, the uncle I talked about, who had grown up with my mother. And I said, I just want to, as a family member, I want to share what I'm writing about this. You know this story because I've told you, but would you read what I wrote And he read it, and he said, this was just in draft form at that point, and he said, Joan, I know that's the way you see it, and it's true. It happened that way, but she was doing the best she could.
Oh, I'm sure. Yes.
And it would be helpful to you, to me, because he was a therapist, too. You know, there's that part of it. It would be helpful to you, Joan, if you could have a little more empathy and understanding with what she was going through and the way she was raised. And that was really where he started telling me all these stories about her. And I thought, oh my gosh. And I rewrote that chapter.
You know, I'm sure that there was a lot of that in that kind of response, because girls who got pregnant in those days, I mean, you hear so many stories.
Their lives were over.
And they had to give the babies up. What horrible thing is that? You know, it didn't work out so happily in that area.
But I'll tell you what my father ended up doing.
What?
And I think he did this maybe even without my mother's knowledge. Although he was reflecting the party line, he did, at a certain point, when birth control pills were available.
Yes.
He got me a prescription. He said it was because I was always complaining that I had very difficult periods.
Right.
I had a lot of pain, and that was absolutely true.
Yes.
I had terrible cramps. My mother never believed it because she didn't have cramps. And she would make me go to school in high school when I was just wanting to just roll on the floor and clutch my stomach.
Yes.
And she would be she would be called from the office to pick me up by the nurse because I couldn't even sit in a chair.
Right.
And she would berate me on the way home because she didn't believe me. And that was the sort of relationship we had. So once birth control pills became available, my father wrote me a prescription, said this is because not because I want you to have sex, because obviously you're not supposed to have sex, but because this will relieve the discomfort you feel with your cramping. Well, before that, I had made an appointment with a OBGYN in my college community to get a diaphragm.
Yes,
so I had
ask you.
Got ahead with taking care of that. And you would think that my father's responsibility all along would have been to say, no, we don't want you to do it, but if you are, here's the way you can be safest as far as we know. But you know, he couldn't do that at that time. Just later.
So if you write a letter, I mean, I can see you writing a letter to your mother. And you could just mail it to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, just so it shows up in somebody's pile. And then put it in some treasure box that you have. And somebody will find it. Oh, I think that's a wonderful thing to do.
I wonder if it would be some sort of good legacy for my uncle's daughter.
Yes, of course. Any of your family, any of your history.
Because I never had children. My brother never had children. And I laugh with him, it was because we had no idea how to do that, which for me I think was true. And it's sort of strange that the maternal instinct that my mother was sure she was missing, I was also missing.
Could be.
So it could have just been something. I don't know if it's how much was biology and how much was the way we were raised.
Yes. But what you say about your niece... is so true, because this is your history documented in your own hand.
Yeah.
And you know, whenever you find stories of letters that were found, Donna Reed's letters to the World War II soldiers in the front page in her own handwriting, or the relationship between Jackie Robinson, that little Ben, I don't know, some little 13-year-old Jewish kid he had a relationship with. The kid had written him a pen pal letter. A fan letter, and Jackie Robinson wrote back, and it turned into a back and forth for years. And these letters were found, and the front page, it was in Jackie Robinson's own handwriting. It's gold, that personal touch.
I'll tell you another kind of love letter that is gold. I was a high school English teacher for 22 years.
Oh, gosh, you just have all these unfolding.
I love this.
I
never stood still. And I still get love letters from my students. I run into them now, you know, I'm Facebook friends with them.
Oh, how wonderful.
But I also get letters, and they move me so much.
Okay, that's an important thing to talk about.
So for anyone listening, I'll bet that your life path was partly determined by a special teacher.
Yes.
And if you could write a love letter to that teacher.
I'm so glad you're saying this, because it's one of the things I say a lot in terms of who to write a love letter to. Pick a teacher you loved and who made a difference in your life, who protected you from a bully or showed you how to do something beautifully that's held you in good stead in life, and find out where that teacher is and mail it.
Yes.
And for a teacher to get a letter 30 years later is just heart-stopping.
Yes.
And so is writing it, you know? Or a teacher you made crazy with your bad behavior, write a letter and say, I'm so sorry I did that to you. You were wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, that too.
Yeah.
Apologies are great love letters.
You know, I wrote love letters to my teachers when I graduated from high school. I didn't even know how important it would be.
Oh, yes.
But I knew that here I was going off on a college path,
mm-hmm.
and that partly the reason I believed in myself
mm-hmm.
was because of this particular English teacher and this particular
And so you followed
teacher.
Through and
I
sent
did.
Those?
Okay, I did.
And I would bet. That are those teachers still alive? Or
well, not now, but
yes.
when I sent them.
No, I was going to say, I bet when they went through those teachers' uh-huh. bedside table drawers, somebody found your letters.
Well, the math teacher responded, and she said, "I'm going to have your letter read at my funeral."
Yes, and that's right, yeah. and which gets to another point, which is writing the eulogy and sending it ahead as a love letter,
oh.
because they are going to be read at funerals,
okay.
and that's a specific thing that I talk about and encourage. Which is how this whole thing started, by the way. This whole love letters
oh.
program was a request to do an obituary, a friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't want to do it, and I, you know, she wanted me to do it, and I refused, and I didn't want to do anything that looked to a time she wasn't on this earth with me. And then I finally realized, why not write it as a love letter and send it on ahead?
That's beautiful.
And it was astounding because her response was, I didn't recognize myself in it.
Really?
Which shocked me because she's gorgeous and accomplished and wonderful. And I thought, you know, double the gift.
Yeah.
You should see yourself more clearly. That is through the eyes of someone who loves you, not through your own clouded mess.
Yes.
So, yes, all these letters are so important. I'm so glad you have those from your students.
And I'm so glad you give so much to the world, Janet.
Thank you.
I'm
having a whale of a time here, as you can tell, and I'm having a wonderful time with you.
Well, that's what happens when we follow our passion.
Yes.
You're doing it, I'm
yeah.
doing it.
Yes, I think
and,
so.
And these, what happens of it is just beautiful.
Well, I want to thank you for doing this again with me, and I want to remind you all that you can go to Joan's website, www.joanprice.com, and get to know her a little bit better. And I'm so glad that you've all had the chance to hear this in her own voice and to remind you or to suggest. I think it's just an incredibly generous thing that Joan has done in writing her two books. She shared a part of her life to encourage others, and it's a beautiful thing to do. And I also want to say that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, I like to say this all the time, writing a love letter is a special occasion. So for the teachers who helped you, for anybody where you have a good memory or are grateful for something, there is no point in taking gratitude to the grave. It serves no one. But sending it on ahead makes life beautiful for everyone. So until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying bye-bye.
Wow.